Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Hi, and welcome. All right, today I'd like to shift gears and talk a little bit about some business-related subjects. And the first is the power and danger of business debt. Now, every business owner I know, they all want to build and grow a business, create a lot of stability, infrastructure, have a profitable company. And one way to get there is to use debt. And when I say use debt, I mean to borrow money and use it within the business to either make an acquisition, pay for a startup of the company, buy assets, buy equipment, buy a competitor, buy an existing business. There's lots of ways you can use debt within a business. Now, of course, you have to be responsible and make very good choices. The debt can get you into trouble if you're not. So let's talk about the ways that you could use debt. And I'll just use my company as an example because it's convenient and I'm familiar with it. Let's say that I have a relationship with a bank and I have a line of credit available through the bank because of the strength of my business finances. We have cash flow, we pay our bills, we have good credit, we are regular with all of our vendors that we are paying on a regular basis. And let's say that based on the cash flow of the business, that the bank is willing to give me a line of credit. Now, I can use that line of credit to meet short-term fluctuations in my business income. So let's just say, for example, that we had a month or two, for whatever reason, that our business was slower, that we didn't have the income that we normally had. But let's say that we, at the same time, we also had a little higher expenses than we normally did because we were trying to expand in a certain way. Maybe we were getting, well, say we're getting equipment to do television and radio. I mean, so, or we were going to do different type of marketing, or we were trying something different. In any event, let's say that those two kind of crossed where we had a slower month and we had higher expenses than normal. A line of credit is often used by a business to fill that short-term cash shortfall. So the business pulls on the line of credit, uses it to pay the expenses, and then when things resume back to quote-unquote normal, pay the bank back. Now, that's a good deal for the bank because, of course, they're going to make interest on that money that you've borrowed. That's a very simple way to describe using a working capital loan, which is also called a line of credit for a business. But there's also things you can do that are more growth-oriented or more aggressive, not reckless, but aggressive. And what I mean by that, let's say, for example, that there is another financial planning company in my area that is interested in maybe the gentleman or the woman that owns the business. Let's say that he or she is looking to make an exit. Maybe they don't have somebody to take over within the company. There's no heir apparent. There's no child to take over, son or daughter that might want to go into the business and take over. And let's just say that, or they simply just want to sell it for whatever reason. And let's say that I become aware of that, or they reach out to me because they see I'm growing and that our company is growing. And they say, you know, we'd like to talk about maybe working together in some fashion. We'd like you to maybe consider merging the companies together or even buying our company. I could use the business line of credit, borrow the money from the bank to make that acquisition. Perhaps I used part of my line of credit, some of available cash, and maybe an agreement with the seller that will pay he or she some of the money over time. With that arrangement, the leverage of the line of credit allows the acquisition, and then with the cash flow from the combined larger company, and there may be additional efficiencies that you gain by having the bigger company. Maybe you're able to eliminate one of the office locations, cut overhead. I've got plenty of space in my office, so it would be easy for me to absorb another firm. So with that enhanced cash flow and more efficient operation, perhaps it's a little bigger, that extra cash can be used to pay down that line of credit quickly and also pay off the seller. That is an example, if done correctly, of a good use of business debt. Now, I'll give you a bad use of business debt or line of credit. Back in mid-2000s, 2006, I had an opportunity to invest in a startup company. It was it was in the financial field, but it was another kind of company. And I wasn't managing it. I was, in essence, an investor in the company. And I saw it as a way to diversify, maybe not put all my eggs in one basket. And so I chose to use the convenience and the leverage of accessing some of my line of credit to invest into that business and help it get off the ground. And it worked. It worked well for a period of time. And then we had, of course, as everyone recalls, 2008, 2009, and that business was significantly affected. There were some other challenges. It was in another state, so I wasn't as close to it as I am to my own business. So long story short, the business did not do well. Now, after all was said and done, I got my money out of it, but it was not pleasant. And then I was able to pay the line of credit back. But it could have turned out even worse, where I didn't get my money back and would have been left owing the money to the bank. So when it comes to borrowing money to make an investment, you need to even double or triple check what you're doing. You know, it's one thing to use cash money that you have available to invest in, whatever it may be. And you still want to be very careful with your cash money. But when it comes to borrowing money, you know, you've got that additional leverage. In other words, if you've got cash, if the worst thing that happens is you lose that cash, well, you've lost the cash, but that's the end of it. If you lose borrowed money, you still owe that money. So it's got an additional level of risk, which is why it's called leveraging the risk or leveraging the opportunity. The return can be very good because you don't have as much, you're not having to come up with as much cash yourself. So the actual return on dollars you've invested can be greater, but it carries with it, as is often the case, more risk can create more return, but more return usually does come with more risk. So these are some of the things to keep in mind when you are borrowing. Now, I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on TV or radio. I strongly recommend that if you're considering making any type of acquisition or any major project that requires borrowing money from a bank, you definitely want to talk to your attorney. You also want to talk to your accountant, your tax preparer, business advisor, your financial advisor, and get their perspective on the prudence, the viability. I mean, the worst they can say is no, right? And of course, the running joke about CPAs, and I'm a CPA, so I can take this joke as well, is if you ask a CPA if you should do it, they're going to say no. Okay, well, if that's the worst that can happen, that's okay. But it's always good to double and triple check your decisions and your ideas, especially when you're going to borrow money. It's a very exciting thing to grow a business, but you want to be responsible with it. Same goes if you're going to buy property or you're going to buy rental property. That's another thing that people look at doing, and they borrow money sometimes to do that. And there was, back in the early to mid 2000s, there were a lot of people that borrowed money and got that money cheaply, and many of them did it with variable interest rates and things like that. They would buy property and then hope that the valuation would go up, and they would flip it, sell it quickly for a profit, or they would buy it, rent out the property, and then enjoy the enhanced cash flow that would come to them in the form of rent in excess of what it was costing them to pay the bank. So they were making money on the spread, if you will. If they were collecting $5,000 a month and only paying the bank two or three, then they were living off that spread. But then when interest rates went up and when the recession hit, then there was this bad combination that caused them to really be in a bad spot. So debt can be a great part of an overall plan, be it personal or business debt, but be careful. And being careful will help you plan stronger.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back. All right, I've got another topic for you that is a little bit on this money, legal, financial thing that kind of blends together, and it's the subject of divorce. And I want to share with you some ideas and some strategies. They are not in any way legal advice. I'm not an attorney. I've said that before. But these are things that are smart to do no matter how good your relationship. The statistics are out there, and there are plenty of situations where people are surprised with divorce. So before, during, and after the divorce, those are the three important time periods. There are things that you need to be aware of, things you need to be thinking about. If you suspect or have any concern about a potential divorce, but what I'm going to share with you, you should be doing anyway. Number one, it's good for you to always know what your marital family assets are. To know these things is important anyway, and you'll see as I start to describe what I mean by that. And that if something did happen or you see odd behavior, whatever it may be, you are going to be in a much better place, a much more informed position. And I'll even argue that even may make a healthier marriage that if you know these things, you'll have a better understanding of the finances, which is always good, right? All right. So I've got a lot of things I'm going to be referring to that you'll have to indulge me. I want to read certain things to you because there's so many things to think about. And it's kind of a laundry list. So you'll have to indulge me a little bit on this. But the before part of that's really the biggest one. If you mess up the before, you're in big trouble during and after the divorce. Now, a really good attorney can save you from lack of preparation, but it's probably going to cost you more and it's going to make it more difficult and it will certainly make it more stressful. So the before is the most important part. And again, the before may be before you know, and also may be before you have any suspicion. So these are all things that you need to know and be prepared. Number one, where are all the assets? Where's the money? Do you know where it is? Do you monitor and get copies of statements? Do you review the investments? No, he takes care of that. No, she takes care of that. And I've seen it done both ways with couples that come in and meet with me. It's a lot of situations where it's not necessarily that traditional male dominant looking at the finances and managing the money. I've seen it both ways. So please keep track of what you've got. It doesn't hurt to say, look, you know what? I'd really like to be more involved with the finances. Something could happen to you. You don't have to say divorce. You can just say, hey, look, something might happen where you are disabled or you die, and I need to know where everything is. It doesn't get more easy than that. So ask and know where these investments are and review them. Monthly, at least quarterly. Maybe you make it part of your family, I don't know, some sort of process you have where you do that together. And just to make sure that you are tracking your progress, either going into or in retirement, tracking how you're doing. By the way, a lot of divorce statistics are rising, especially in older ages, as people live longer, they're married longer in retirement, and the shifting of our culture and how divorce is seen in our society. There are a lot more older divorces than there used to be. And maybe it's just, hey, I married him for maybe a 5 or 10 year retirement, not for 30. I can put up with him for 10, maybe not for 30. All right. So these are some of the things to look at. Know about the debts. Where are they? How much do you have in debt? If later you find out there's a lot more debt, maybe there's something unusual going on, especially if you're both on the hook for the debt. If one of you can write a check on a line of credit, but you're both on the hook for it, hello, that's something to be very aware of. Familiarize yourself with all of your insurances, life insurance policies, annuities, long-term care. Have a good sense for what it costs you to run your household on a monthly basis. How much money do you need? If you don't know how much it takes to run your household, you're in a bit of a precarious position. You don't know, then how will you know what to ask for? How will you know what is required? How will you know how much you need to have to make ends meet? Now, those are just some examples, and that's not an exhaustive list of all the things that are important to know and be aware of. I think it's critical to know where the money is. Okay, let me shift gears now and talk about the importance of preparing and doing the things you need to do during the during phase of the divorce. Now, it's not pleasant. I know of no one that has a fun time with divorce. Maybe there's some revenge, but there's not fun. All right. So what are the things you need to do during the divorce. There are a number of documents that you need to gather and information that you need to get a hold of if you haven't already. The attorney you work with is going to tell you the things that you need to do, guide you on what you need to prepare. But there are some basic things. All the documents I mentioned about before, you need to have all of those. You're also going to have to be really clear on what it's going to cost to operate your household. You're going to need to gather the information that will help your attorney clarify and say, look, this is what it's going to cost to pay the bills. There will be also an importance understanding the benefits you're entitled to, like Social Security or pensions. Very often pension plans, defined benefit plans, have a benefit that you are entitled to, and you may get a part of your spouse, soon-to-be ex-spouse's pension, either at their full retirement age, so it might come much later, or you may get part of their 401k or 403b or IRA money at that time after the divorce is completed. So it's not just cash in the bank we're talking about splitting up. It's not just alimony potentially going one way or the other. And there's also these established benefits like a pension plan that will be part of it. And another consideration is Social Security. This is a big one. You can file for your own Social Security benefits, but one of the things that is very important, and attorneys talk about this with people, that if you're contemplating divorce, that or you are met with divorce, the length of your marriage affects whether or not your spouse, again, soon to be ex-spouse's Social Security earnings record can be considered for your Social Security benefits when you retire. So there are a lot of considerations that go into, and again, a lot of this is guided by the attorney, but for example, with Social Security, if you are married 10 years, then when it comes time to file for your Social Security, you can draw off of the work history of your ex-spouse, even though you're not married at the time you start drawing Social Security, and that might give you a higher benefit than if you just drew on your own Social Security record. Now, that has no impact, although you might like it to, it has no impact on the Social Security benefits they draw on, or even if they have remarried, the Social Security benefits that their new spouse draws from. So that earning record is important, and the 10-year mark is kind of the magic number. Now, what about after? After the divorce, there are a lot of things that need to be done to implement and satisfy the requirements of the settlement agreement. A lot of divorces end with a property settlement agreement that will spell out who gets what, who pays whom, if there's alimony or something like that. You'll want to make sure that assets are transferred or liquidated according to the court order and the agreement. You want to pay off and close any joint debt. You want to close any joint bank accounts, obviously. You want to retitle and redo beneficiary designations. Don't forget those. Update your estate plans. People sometimes overlook these things. Who's going to be your power of attorney? Who's going to have the healthcare power of attorney to make decisions about your healthcare? And then also, you need to update, and this is probably one of the most important parts, update your own financial and investment plans now that you are divorced to see you into your retirement or through your retirement years. All of these things are vital. In fact, there's only a handful here I've talked about. All of these things are vital to know about them before, during, and after. But the key is to really take action, be your own advocate, and be prepared. Hopefully it never happens, but just in case, and if it does, you know what I'm going to say, that'll help you plan stronger.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.